Strike a Chord Podcast, music chit chat with your hosts Valentina Gikowski and Amla Piriakabu.
Welcome back to Strike a Chord. If you've been eagerly waiting to continue our journey from part one, the time has come. In this episode, part two of our musical musings series, we'll be picking up where we left off, talking about music in general and the industry itself. We've had some amazing insights and discussions so far. I promise you won't be disappointed with what's in store in today's episode. So let's not keep you waiting any longer. Without further ado, let's dive into part two.
When you go on this stage, or even sometime in the band as well, some person having an issue, some person having a problem. Yeah. Yeah. So as a main person or leader, or you want to be nurture as well, everyone, and bring that energy back again to the stage, you know. And let's not forget, we're talking about now, and we're talking about what went through with the artist's life as well, and the human emotions and everything.
That's right.
So not just that we are, as a musician or individual artist, we are creative people also, so we are very sensitive as well.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
course.
The creative people is always sensitive. Creative people think
there's
about
no sensitivity there,
and also they have more brains, waves work,
different.
Run so fast. Yeah. And then maybe some people don't understand it. It's okay, you know.
100%.
So, and also with after COVID and everything, and the pre, you know, the psychologically, mentally, emotionally, a lot of things happening. So when the venues are open, we artists, we feel more what's going on. So we need to be very, very aware of that as well.
Yeah.
And that sympathy is sympathy of each
of
person, you know, because even the audience is coming there. They're just coming to enjoy it. They don't even know what band you're going to. Sometimes they don't even know that what songs we're going to play. What band is that? They're just walking into the venue. They just want
and
to experience.
And this is the common thing with a lot of people. They all avoid sitting next to the speaker. It's like, right on the other side. But sometimes it's like they think it's going to be, oh my God, they'll see these massive speakers and they think, oh no, I'm going to. But it's not about that. It's about that. I think, and the people know more now with technology, and they see people on video and everything like that, and they go to see people that they want to see and everything like that. But sometimes at a gig, it can be intimidating for them too. You know, if you go to a gig where there's a lot of people, and you know, and you think, oh, I'll give you an example. I went and saw Megadeth a few months back. And Megadeth is Megadeth, right? You're expecting these things, and we got our, you know, earplugs ready and everything like that. And, you know, I went with my son, and I go to my son, all right, you haven't been to a, you know, to a metal concert before. He's 17 earplugs, right? So we get there and the first band starts, and they're loud, the support band, but they're never as loud as the main band, right? And we can handle it. And then Megadeth comes out, and it was probably one of the best sounds that I've ever heard. No earplugs, no nothing.
Wow.
And this is at I think Rod Laver Arena, right? So you're expecting Megadeth to come out and just shoot your ears off. But it was so well engineered and audio engineered, and everything was really, you couldn't hear any distortion apart from the guitars. But that, you know, that distortion that you get from too much, you know, peaking?
Crossing your frequencies.
Yeah.
And
you know what? My ears weren't ringing afterwards.
Oh, wow.
You know, they were loud, but they were clean. It was really, and this is also people, you know, when they see everything set up and they think, oh, this is going to be a loud gig, you know. For example, when you set up, like it's big, but it's not going to pierce your ears, right?
Yeah. I mean, we've had our share of hearing strain or strain on the ears. Like a couple of our members have hearing loss and that, and
tinnitus, whatever it is.
Tinnitus and it can be challenging. But I think it's always when you go and see a gig with great sound. Actually, funnily enough, I saw a few years back Roger Waters at the same venue. I think Rod Laver. That was one of the best sounding.
It's Roger Waters.
That's true. Yeah, the production was just exceptional, and it was one of the best front of house systems. I think you've just, again, reminded me of another thorny issue, and that is sound on stage. Like, particularly, I think we're both singers as well.
Thank you.
and you sing as well, yep. Current, if you sing?
try to sometimes.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Yep. Me too. We've got something in common. So it's like you struggle sometimes with the fallback. That's always the biggest problem. Is fallback, particularly.
Exactly. You're right.
It doesn't matter how soft the band is. Sometimes, depending on the venue, you just can't hear yourself.
Well, this is why some people have in ears, right? And when they have in ears, like I've tried in ears, I can only handle them maybe for half a set. Because then I get pain in my ear. I don't know why, but I think one of the biggest issues
I have is I know it's gonna sound a bit pretentious, but I really want to feel that vibe of amps and the crowd.
No, I get that.
Yeah. And I don't want that in ear thing, like kind of it feels like it's just gonna be like an annoying insect getting in the way. Like I know it's gonna might help me sing better.
Yeah.
But I feel like I just want like I could do that at home. With my headphones, like it's like, well, you know, but I totally get the advantage of why people do it, but I haven't made that leap yet because I'm a little bit worried it's going to kill the vibe or something. I don't know.
I think there's a place for them if you're doing a big place, right?
Big venue,
and it's a big stage and you got the fallbacks there and whatever, or you haven't got any fallbacks
or
the in ears. But the way I see, if it's a smaller type of venue, I always like to hear the front of house as well. So if I can get in front of those speakers and listen, I know it's an issue more of the times, but if I can get out there and hear a bit of the front of house, I think it helps a bit more. If that doesn't help, then I'd like to emulate the fallback as closely as possible to the front of house.
Yep.
Where... You know, if I've got a bit of reverb,
and stuff.
I wouldn't mind that coming through the fallbacks as well.
Fallback
but
mix.
That's a whole different conversation,
that's another,
right?
I've had mixed experience. I've had in-ears for about 10 years, like professional molded. Two things. I think it does kill a bit of the vibe, especially from the front, like from the audience. Mm. And I find that it works well. Say in a big sort of concert situation where you've got a set, you go out and everyone is doing their thing and there's not really much in the way of improv or anything like that, it works well. But where it's disappointing, you know, when you don't have in-ears, I think it's the caliber of whoever you're playing with. And one of the big measures for me, you know, as you mature as a player, it's not the shredding, it's not all that stuff, it's dynamics.
Sure.
And
I agree.
When I was really young, I got a lecture from my friend Refik's dad, who's since passed away, but this guy, he was this amazing jazz drummer. And when I met him, he was in his 70s, and we're doing a gig like, you know, 21, playing away, and he's like, in the nicest possible tone, pull me aside, please. I'm going to tell you this word, he goes, it's a French word. He's a Turkish guy. He's like, nuance. And he just, you know, he's having a glass of wine and he lectured me on nuance. He goes, think of it as, you know, when I'm singing or speaking, you turn down. It was just, it was all hand gestures and whatever. And I took that on board. And, you know, I mean, you can't do it for every style or for, you know, sometimes it's just go, go, go. But if you're playing with people who understand that concept of nuance and dynamics and all of that kind of stuff, it negates the need for any sort of in-ear monitors, even anything loud on stage.
I agree.
Yeah, it's definitely a factor.
And it's the awareness of, if you're playing with other musicians, of how they're listening to you as well, if they're listening to you. I've played with some musicians where
I've failed.
Close your eyes and just no awareness. It's like, oh my God. You're trying to, and then you get to stop. You know, it's
or
like,
just turn down their mic or just get the sound guy to.
Once your eyes are closed, you can't even.
No, that's it.
It's happened with my band as well.
Seen that happen with your band. I've been in the band when it's happened.
It's happened. Yeah, it's a solo. It's like so long. Everyone in.
Yeah, thinking, we're all waiting. And there's no awareness.
You know, like how? But then it's okay because what is improvisation in between.
That's true.
Let them finish their journey where they're going into that. And it will come back.
Separate. They'll become aware of everything. There are some musicians that are not aware of anything from start to end, even before they enter, before they go on stage. And they still haven't got the awareness when they're at home. So That's what I'm talking about. It's like
yes.
the nuance. You have to have that.
But it also depends on, see, I like to split it into, like, say, creative sessions or recording sessions are completely different to just, say, doing a gig, like a commercial gig, for example.
Mm.
And if it's like commercial gig of covers, it's even worse, like, because the expectation is, okay, we're playing whatever and everyone knows it.
So you this just is the form. It. Yeah. Bang.
Bang. But even then, you still need to have dynamics because otherwise you just never, you know, you never really get to hear yourself. You can't hear the art. Like, it's just...
I was going to say, in-ear monitoring for something like covers, gigs or corporate gigs, absolutely. Like, they're a godsend in that sense. I mean, I've got a drumming side hustle. That's DM a drummer, folks. If you need a drummer, DM a drummer. That's the name of the business. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Actually, I might talk to you after the podcast.
Can you repeat that?
Sorry, we'll do mates rates. It's DM a drummer. That's now the third time I mentioned it. So you should have it. You should have it in your head now.
I will put the link up.
But I was going to say, doing those corporate gigs, there's backing tracks and other things, and you know, if I'm in the drummer's seat, I've got to have those tracks going.
Absolutely.
But even the singer, like at the front, he's got the tracks that he's singing along to, and it's all synced up. It's all a well-oiled machine. Mm-hmm. So in that professional sense, absolutely, that technology is great. I think for me, where the limitation lies is the originality. I want a bit of that grit. It's not just in ear monitoring, but other things too, like that ambience, which is a bit of a nebulous term, but you know,
again, is that related to the dynamics?
Absolutely, yeah. Dynamics, so
that's
yeah.
what you're expecting on stage, and what your expectation is for it to sound like I'm actually playing at the moment. Whereas with the in-ears or headphones, it's like you're playing in a studio, and you're not. It's not a live thing. It's like you're playing in a session. You know,
it just feels a bit mechanical to me. That's my takeaway. But the dynamics thing, I mean, you know. Some of the best gigs I've done have been where there has been almost no fallback. I know we've just talked about the limitations of not having good fallback, but I mean, you know, the venues where they can't even mic up the amp.
Just the back line.
Yeah, it's just literally just playing on stage, a stage that might just be level with the audience. We've done a few of those gigs.
The corner,
yeah, or maybe on top of a piano.
maybe on those gigs have, yeah.
Well, I should say pressed up against the piano, like just kind of sat back.
With a piano player, you're on top of the piano with a piano player.
You know, oh, yeah,
the jazz sort of stuff.
Sitting on the piano. Yeah, yeah.
With the big glass.
I don't have the legs for it. But I was going to say the limitation of sometimes these bigger. See, we've played gigs where there's bigger stages and really professional setup, and it sounds great. But then we're almost a little bit intimidated because we're not used to that big sound. It sort of lacks a bit of intimacy. But then we do these sort of smaller, intimate gigs, and they're often a lot more fun because we're often having to gauge our own levels, in a good way, and it's not just like this one thing where we're sort of adapting, but also, you know, you get natural reflections, you get all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, of
so
course.
Yeah, there's pros and cons, but I think you know, sometimes people invest too much, and I can say this as well as someone who also is a bit of a tech head, but sometimes we invest too much in the professional thing. When we go back to the 1950s, like
there was nothing.
Yeah, there was
not so much. People are just sitting there and enjoying it, and with the
jam.
But the venues were
sitting down there.
The venues were different then.
There was no sound or anything. There was no fallback. Just the one microphone is given.
Especially old auditoriums and theaters. They had a lot of
different,
a lot of natural reef. Yeah, definitely.
And that plays a part. Everything plays a part when you're playing. The sound. If it's a good sound, you'll play well. If it's a sound where you can't hear yourself, or you're struggling to hear, or you're going to be playing harder to produce that sound, and you're not going to be able to play how you play. You're going to play as something totally different.
Also, you know? With the sound engineer, it's okay if we take our own sound and we know what we're doing. But if we going to the different venue, for my. way of looking at that, the sound engineer should know all the instrument as well.
That's a big call, because Sarita, there are a lot of instruments.
Yeah,
right?
But a lot of instrument. But point is there, if the sound engineer doesn't know this, what's a sitar exactly sound like, or where's the sitar microphone issue should be handled? Well, yeah. How do you be, or where's the tabla tone is going to become?
I think,
I think for a guitar to be then done, you know, and but traditional instrument, there is a way of understanding.
Yeah,
it.
But sorry, Arif.
Yeah.
I think.
I
wouldn't agree with that. I would say that you need to know yourself where the position of the mic and how the mic
should be. No, we know it, but we are sitting on this stage, and if the sound engineer is mixing, that's what I'm talking about. Okay. You know, when the guy's on the mixing,
the
balance.
The balance. Yeah, I can say my vocal needs a little bit reverb delay, but where is my sitar needs a little bit like mid-range or cut higher.
Understanding frequencies
and that thing too, because guitar, bass guitar, everything is drum done, but the traditional instrument.
I hear you, because when I play mic on a nylon string guitar,
must be beautiful.
It is, but it has to be mic'd up properly.
Exactly.
If it's not,
because the sound is coming from what you're playing, but also it's they're coming through that. What instrument require that frequency?
Exactly. And that's when you resort to the pickup, plug it in, and you know what? Just leave everything flat and I'll just do my own.
Yeah.
But that's not the same as effect as playing in front of a mic.
Yeah.
I can tell you now, it's not the same thing. It doesn't feel the same on your fingers. It's not the same at all.
Or like equipment as well. Like I bought my new equipment for the Spawn before I was playing so many gigs. And now it's like the band is becoming big, and you know, venues are big and so we carry our own amp and things. So I invested more to the different range of where my sitar can be, you know, have a more, the wider range of
the sound. You've got your electric sitar as well.
I've got electric sitar too. And how do I, with the two electric guitar and the bass and the drum and keys.
You need to be...
to balance that leverage, the level of that. And also how to... not to take over too much of the, put too much sitar in that, but it's just to balance, you know, in between of sitar and so.
And I think it's easier with electric style of instruments, whether it's guitar or bass.
Exactly.
You know, you got pedals, you got volume controls, you got this. That. With acoustic, it's
I'm struggling with the violin as well. Yeah. I get it.
And the flute.
Oh, the flute.
Well.
I mean, the flute cuts through a bit more.
But if you're playing on the same mic.
I'm always playing on the same mic. I think I might have to get an electric violin for the mariachi gigs.
But this is the thing: when we played the last show that we played, you had the same mic because we didn't have enough channels, right?
Yeah.
So that's the other thing that you need to be wary of. Like the flute cuts through, but then you put the violin, and then
we
didn't have an audio engineer. Mm. So you gotta make do with what you have, but. They're the expectations, you know, where you...
Well, that's why this time I bought my sitar, acoustic sitar, new one, which is, they've got the three different pickups as well. Like I use my AKG 411 for that too good Phantom Power, you know, requires. Yep. But then I, that another pickup, three pickups is there, and they got it from USA.
Yeah.
And they put it on next to the bridge.
Yeah.
So there's another option that where I don't have a proper equipment or something. So there we go. Okay, I put my jack.
Yeah.
And then I take my own amp.
Yes.
So I can do the both, either on acoustic or electric guitar, you know.
And this comes to that never-ending thing about musicians where we spend more money on equipment and everything than what we earn. You know, it's like you're going to a $100 gig with $5,500 worth of equipment in your car.
In your $50 car.
true.
You know, like we all want to be that person where we've got good equipment, and you know our equipment is more reliable than our transport sometimes.
Yeah.
So we got good equipment, but we can't get to the gig. You know,
but that's the hunger, you know, for that.
Yeah, but you've got to be prepared for every sort of gig, like you said. Like you got a pickup, can't work with pickup. Got a mic, you can't work with a mic.
Yeah, that's the only. Pickup. That's why I just recently went in March. I went to India and I got another sitar with acoustic, and I said that's how I'm going to do it.
Yeah,
because it's hard to balance everything.
And if you've got a few bass guitars and you got fretless and fretted and everything, and they're not cheap, right? So this is the thing as well where. Not only do you need to have the equipment, good equipment, but you have to have the right equipment. So if you're playing in a band where they, you know, it's a funky prototype fitted, If it's more of a different sort of thing, you probably take the fretless. These are the things that normal people don't know.
Yeah, I grew up around a lot of guitarists and keyboard players, and aside from discussing music, they were more interested in showing you, oh, I've got this, I've got this pedal, I've got that pedal. And then I just thought, no. I got some advice from an older, more sort of experienced player, and he said to me, look, don't worry too much about pedals or this and that. He said, just get the best possible equipment that you can, because that's half or 90% there. You know, all the effects and stuff come later. So if you've got good equipment, you're almost there. But what I did probably about 10 years ago, I bought this really, really, really expensive wireless setup. So when it was, do you remember the US dollar was parity to Australian dollar?
Yeah, oh, yes.
One of my mates went to New York and I made a list. And I got I got all
the
this stuff, list. Like expression pedals, you know, wireless kit, everything. And so it's got a 200-foot range. So I go to the back corner of the room for sound check and I can hear the front of house while I'm sound checking. And that's the way I do it now. Mm-hmm. But you can't do that with, like, you wouldn't be able to do it with sitar. You wouldn't be able to do it with, like, keys or anything like that. It's only certain instruments.
Yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, you got to play, right?
So it helps.
It helps. It doesn't help if you've got, like, all this $5,500 guitar and you're going up there and, you know, you're not up to it. You know, you're not in that pro, like... We're all pros. We all go there. We all play and we all work and, you know, with that. But we know what we're doing with our instruments. Some people have these mega instruments that they don't know how to use them.
I'm still learning. Be honest.
I was about
with
to
you.
Say I'm still learning how to use.
Learning because it's like sounding. Where is to satisfy? You know, there's still
know
hunger.
What it's supposed to sound like.
Yeah.
And you know what it's supposed to sound like.
I think so.
You do. Yeah. Some people don't know. They just, no. I just got this thing. What do you think?
Yeah.
What do you think? You know?
Well,
with technology, I'm still learning with that sort of thing.
If there are any bass players watching, there's two things I learned from the masters. So one is a lot of people misplace the sound on stage for the front of house. So in other words, if they're coming out like really raw in the fallback, no effects, nothing like that. They think that it's like that in the front house. So you have to have a bit of faith in the front house, because if you start mucking around too much with your tones and stuff, then when it comes to everyone playing together, it fizzles. So with particularly in bass, you need to go a little mid to high so it cuts through on stage, and then have faith in the front. And then I forgot what the second one was.
Have a bass guitar?
No. That's a simple
have
one.
The hands.
No. If you want to get fancy, so because it's basically a mono instrument, but a lot of people do things in stereo these days. Mm. So you can get like, like digital, say a digital delay or whatever, like a stereo.
Processing, digital processor.
And go left and right, even on stage. And it just sounds much, much more full and balanced.
Yeah. That'll give you that sort of surround sort of the spread.
But, yeah, definitely don't mistake your tone on stage for the front house.
Yeah.
Tone on stage should be just for the purpose of you and others hearing you.
But with that as well, I think you got to take consideration where you're playing. Like you said before, there might not be a stage. It might just be flat. It might be a corner. Or it might be... I've played... I remember playing at Federation Square once, and it was one of the worst sounds I've ever played in, because you got the glass shards behind, right? Glass behind for a band is...
Is that edge?
Yeah, the edge.
Yeah.
Inside. Like, one of the worst places to play, like for me anyway. I just couldn't hear anything was going there.
No, I can confirm
back.
That I did a gig there like last year.
Yeah.
It's just
has anyone played
central.
The Melbourne Aquarium?
No.
I've played at the Melbourne Aquarium, but only in a corner.
I got told off by the manager. She came, I don't know why. Like, I wasn't even really loud. but she said, can you turn your bass down because the fish are getting disturbed.
Oh, wow.
And I looked at her and I said, with all due respect, I said, why did you accept a booking for a wedding at your venue if you thought the fish were going to get upset? Because, you know, there's a band playing and there's people dancing.
Yeah.
In the aquarium. Like,
so what did you do? Take your fishing rod out?
No, no, I did that. I don't know if you've seen, there's a video.
Barbecue?
A video of,
put it in a roaster.
Yeah, that's it. Grill fish.
Did you take requests?
No, bass and video around.
Bass and grill fish goes yeah, well together.
That's it. Bass.
I think you mean sea bass. Sea bass. Sea bass.
There's a video of this session guy, Leland Sklar. Like, he's played on a lot of albums. Look, he looks like the ZZ Top guitarist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's got the long
so
beard.
He's
yeah.
got,
yeah.
I can't remember which brand it was, but he's got this amazing bass, right? And it's got all these, like, switches and whatever. And it's got this
Fishman?
Switch.
Sorry.
It's called the producer switch.
Yeah, but it doesn't do anything.
Doesn't do anything. So, yeah, he was in that. Studios where they would say to him, oh, can you just change your tone up a bit and whatever? And like, yeah, no worries. You flick the switch and, oh, that's great. But it does nothing. So it's a psychological thing.
Yeah.
So that's what I did that night. I said, yeah, no worries. I'll turn it down. And
yeah, you flicked the switch.
Oh, yeah.
No worries. And then just kept going.
And then the
going.
Fish were all right. Yeah. Just
kept going.
I'm going to change topic a little bit, just slightly. Actually, not slightly, a lot. What is... Like, where are you guys at in your musical journey at the moment? Like, Simon, where are you at now? Are you at the place where you were planning to be 2-3 years ago? And if not, has that journey changed for you? Or how has there been any alterations in your journey? Has your goals changed or has your mindset changed?
I think it's always on to the next thing for me. So it's obviously the name, you know, I've had the name for well over 15 years now, so it's always been an ever evolving project. But I mean, we're up to album number 5 and that will, you know, probably see release early next year. So
and that's a great achievement. An album is hard.
Yeah, albums are a lot of work. I kind of see it like painting. You come back to it, you might leave it for a few days, then you might get rid of one pit and you're just constantly refining it.
Or you throw it out and you start a new one.
Or you throw it out, student, yeah, which has definitely happened before, especially with individual songs. But with this album, it's kind of come about from a, you know, not just the COVID sort of that, or the post-pandemic landscape or post-lockdown landscape, but also just a few kind of massive speed bumps in my life in the lead up to COVID and so it's kind of got that thematic element, and really drawing from that each time I'm working on something is what has happened in the last few years. So it's a little bit like there's a bit of that voyeuristic diary element, but also it's very there's enough distance, so I would leave it, you know. But yeah, I guess I'm not really, it's probably sounds, again, it probably sounds slightly pompous, but because I've been doing this for a little while, I don't kind of think, oh, God, how am I going to get in the charts? You know, because it's not, that's like a totally different field. That's a totally different area. It's like, forget that, you know. And also the times have changed.
But you've set that expectation for yourself already, right? So on a personal, on your journey, you know, if you say to yourself, all right, like in about a month's time, I'm going to release this album and my goal is to do a launch and get a few gigs and get more gigs. How does that pan out in reality? Has that been, have you had that sort of a plan and has that panned out for you? And if it has, has it been positive
or
negative?
I think so. It's just that little steps, you know, each time we release an album or we release something, it feels like there's a little bit more the recognition of what we do, or people like the songs better. And then I kind of feel like we're improving as a unit and the work's improving. So we just keep chipping away. I don't sort of approach it like, you know, God, I need, you know, going to need some more followers. Like I'm going to need some more of it. I mean, that would be nice, but it's like, I'm just trying to, fundamentally, I'm trying to create the best work possible. and then everything else. Hopefully, we'll grow from there. But it's tough these days. It's tough to get exposure, and it's tough to. There's a lot of this payola thing going on, which concerns me. And in street press, and again, I'm very careful not to name names, but just avenues to get your music out there. It's like, I think what concerns me is that it's becoming a really middle class pursuit. Not there's anything wrong with that in terms of middle class pursuits, but it's the fact that we're shutting out people that don't have the income to fund their own musical career because it's so bloody expensive.
That's been around for a while though.
That's true. That's
been around
new.
For a while. That's it's just that it's new. Getting. I think it's getting a bit worse. That's all. And that you touched upon with all social media and followers and everything like that. That is these days first and foremost before you're even a musician. These days, you know, like. You know, if you wanna put yourself out there as an independent artist and as a musician, it's very important to have all these followers and this and that. And even venues now are looking at how many followers you have and whether you can fill the venue or not. Yeah, before it used to be a bit more quality. Like before it used to be, oh, you know what? I'm looking for this type of musician. Yep. People are gonna come.
Now venue is asking, like recently it's happened as well because you have more followers and things. They have the venue, but they can't bring the audience.
Mm.
So that's what they ask us to, you push it and follow us? But that should not be the case.
That should not be the case because...
I think we artists need to believe alone. And in my understanding, yes, we do a good job and things and we're trying to do. But nowadays, there's a lot of pressure on the artist as well to do like, or venues giving artists pressure as well, which is the...
So
I think... This is not my kind of thing, you know what I mean?
But on the other side, and this is the this is a conversation I had in one of the other podcasts with Nicola about venues are also struggling, right?
So we need to help each other, I understand.
We do always have to help each
always
other.
Always have to help each other, but then there is a point where come artist needs to be focused. Okay, I understand you need the sound equipment or whatever requirements is there. But then, not now, but in 6 months of last year as well, that pressure was there. On me is or a lot of us. I'm not just saying me that we had and we faced it as well. That they just push it out there and push it out there, show it on the social media and this. But then I understand if people want to be understand, they will come anyway. Yeah. I don't understand if I have 1,000 follower, if I have 2,000 follower.
Yeah,
they will come.
Yeah,
as long as I'm satisfied with what I'm doing. But that's hard.
And I think that and that plays with the musician's mind because if I don't have anyone come to the gig, I'm in a loss.
Mm.
B, am I gonna get another gig after that? You know, it's always that playing in your mind. But that shouldn't be the case.
No, that should not be the case.
I'm gonna use Simon as an example. Simon's constantly doing gigs. You're constantly doing gigs, which is great.
Yeah,
you know, and I think that is another thing of becoming that gig fit, and that you're overcoming some of those, you know, those
expectations
and bit of stress. You know, you're out there, you're playing. Yeah. So.
Either that, or I'm a major irritant on the scene, and I'm a fly in the ointment, and I'm just bullying venues into submission. But
you're doing great, and I admire that. I really do.
Thank you. That's very kind of you, Valentina. But what I was going to say is when it comes to booking gig, because obviously, like, as I'm sure a lot of us are here, we're independent. We manage ourselves.
Mm.
I mean, not many people have managers. If you do have one, great. But that's always a challenge is number one, selling yourself, but two, kind of hassling venues and doing the hard sell sometimes. What I think is really important is the network, the helping each other out, as you mentioned, the community of musicians, as we have here today, but also just there's that thing like, you know, if you find artists that you like you enjoy their music and you play with them and then, you know, maybe they'll invite you to play and then vice versa and you build it up that way. And I think in our case, we're kind of lucky because sometimes what's been happening the last few years is venues have contacted us, which is great for me because in the past, you know, I might contact 20 venues. I'm talking like 7 years ago or five years ago, whatever. Yeah, exactly. And then you're lucky if you get maybe one response and that response is kind of going to be, well, maybe. And then it's like, okay, God, then I'm going to have to pull a lineup together. And then I'm going to have to do this, that, which is fine. It's par for the course. But I think just having that awareness of, oh, it's these guys. Like I went into a K cafe the other day. I'm not going to lie, it was a hipster coffee place. Like the most, yeah, with like a $7 coffee, the most pretentious place that has no milk, just coffee, black coffee, and it's, you know, it's been roasted in the fine plains of the Serengeti and squeezed through a 60-year-old man's loincloth. Super fine sort of stuff.
Oh, this sounds great. No.
Yeah, it's just amazing. It was amazing coffee. I was just chatting
to the details.
Yeah, a very detailed review. But I was just sitting there chatting to the barista, and he we just got chatting about music, and then we both discovered that we're both following each other's bands on Insta.
Really?
And it was a weird connection to make, and I just a good connection.
Nothing's a coincidence.
Yeah, but it was like I recognized him vaguely, but it didn't actually click. And then I was like, oh, so we, you know, finally met him. But it was just nice because, I mean, let's be frank, like Melbourne has a lot of artists, a lot of musos. And I think the problem is there's a lot of musos and artists, but maybe not enough venues. And I know it's going to sound weird because, like, well, it's got lots of venues. Yes, but not the right venues.
I've got a comment about that. And I might have a solution too. But. And this is what we were talking about, as I said, with Nicola, you know, in the last few podcasts. Venues are struggling and artists are struggling, right? I don't see the government struggling a hell of a lot because there's all these governments and politicians are giving themselves bonuses and pay rises and everything like that. When it comes to the arts in this country, it's very, very hard, right? It's hard everywhere, but in particular this country. Now, I have an idea where the government, to get these artists up and going, especially the young up-and-coming artists where they've just, you know, these kids have just finished their VCA or nobody knew or whatever, and they come out, they think they're going to be rock stars, rule the world, I'm going to be, you know, top of the charts, whatever, right? They need to be fed that. They need to get out and start playing. These people who want to be out there and playing, they need to, as well as the people who have been there for a long time, right? So the way I see it is that these venues need to have some sort of support from the government as well, right? The idea I had is that the government has to have a big bucket, and I'm not saying about grants or anything like that or whether you're eligible or anything like that, is that if you're hiring bands and musicians and artists, well, you know what? The government will pay X amount, like 75% for every band that comes in, right? From that 75% or from that, they all need to be local artists, and one artist has to be an up and coming artist, right?
Originals acts,
whatever. Yep. It doesn't matter. It's about feeding the young artists as well, but also having tiers of how much they get paid, right? Whereas you're not going to get paid the same as a pro band or pro artist, not going to get the same pay as an up and coming, right? But the government needs to give something back into the music scene here. Melbourne's always been a melting pot for music. People have come from all over Australia and they've moved to Melbourne to be in this scene. You got to feed that scene constantly. It's in a constant loop, right? People always want to go out and see a live band. They always want to go out and see something that's happening in Melbourne. That machine needs to be churning. With all these funding that the government's giving for stupid things, right, that I've seen in the past, that can go to these music artists, and they've got, you know, they should have a proper minister for the arts, not you know, something that's just arts oriented and arts in a global sense. No, it's arts, it's music, it's sculptures, it's other sort of artists, it's whatever it is. But the music scene is what keeps Melbourne going from a nightlife perspective. Whether you're a band, DJ, whatever, right? It's about the music. If the government puts in this plan where the venue just applies for us, saying this is what we have for this coming month, right? These are the bands have, and this is what it is. 75% of the wages is going to the venue so they can pay for the bands.
For the band, exactly.
Right?
So I can see it going, yeah, like corrupt very quickly. Oh,
look, it's an idea, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, there's going to be governance around it. Right, but that's the gist. There's going to be governance around. That's for sure.
But this it's not the art minister. We don't have a culture minister here.
I don't know what we have, but it doesn't seem like we have anything, right?
Yeah, because any person who we're like in India, you can go to the art culture minister and talk to them about.
Oh, look, in Europe, it's the same thing. They've got
here,
a proper...
I don't know. Who do I go to the directly to talk? Indian consulate or Australian consulate. Yeah, we can go to them. But where is the specific person who can...
Exactly.
As a panel, can go there and talk to them.
That government body, right? Yeah. So, and I think this is a good idea. Of course, there are a lot of variations to it and a lot of variables in there and there's governance and all of that.
Mm.
But... you know, if you employ someone within the government that knows about the music, and I'm not talking about these not-for-profit organizations. I'm not talking about that.
No.
I'm not talking about grants.
True.
And I'm not talking about, you know.
Just the general person can go and understand, okay, he's my art minister.
He's my culture minister. About specific music-orientated people that have been in the business for a long time, right?
Exactly.
And that money, right? There's money allocated to it every year. Like there's money allocated to infrastructure and all that bullshit, right? There should be money allocated to the music sector where, all right, you know what? We're going to pay venues this much money, right? Where 75% or 80% 70% goes to the band, the extra goes to the venue, whatever.
You're right in that sense, because that way it takes the pressure from the venue, and it takes pressure from the artist because the artist deserve pay as well.
Exactly, and it gives a bit more boost to the musicians who are struggling.
Music and venues is the only way. Like, of course, apart from sports, we spend so much money on sports and this, but let's be honest, people go outside evening to see. Have a couple of beer, you know, and to listen to nice music. And
look, we you know, as a musician and as an artist, we need to work together with the venues, right? So the venues, at the moment, they're looking at how many followers you have, how many people can you bring, right? So it shouldn't be that. It should be how many people can we get together for this night, right? And it's a collaboration, not only of the music, but, you know.
For me also, when somebody asks me, I won't mention the which venue, but there's a heaps of venue, they ask the same thing. How many we need to, can you bring, you know, audience, you have that following? I said, yeah, I have, but I can't force people to just come to the gig if they want to come, because they've seen so many times. But that should not be the case, because it's just it's for me, it's like, okay, I've been in India and, you know, I came here 5, 6 years, 7 years now. But still, I just feel like, is it? Do we really need venue needs to be asked us to bring that?
Yeah, I think that a venue, if it's good, the venue also has a responsibility to in selling itself. Like, there's a really good, you folks might be familiar with, there's a really good burger joint in Brunswick East called Be East.
I played there.
They have live bands. You see, it's got its regular clientele. Like, sure, like some nights might be a bit quieter, but it's like that venue is, you know, I mean, that was my local when I lived in the area, you know, and it was a lot of people's local as well. And I guess, you know, it was the same when I lived in Brisbane. We had similar venues like Rick's, where it was free, and people were just going and see live music like 7 nights a week. It was and it was always guaranteed a crowd. And I think those, just my personal perception is, those are always the best sort of venues. They're the venues that have a few things going on. They're free. I think where venues run into trouble, this is my experience, is where they have this approach like, right, we're a venue, then we've got a band room out the back. But to get to that band room, you've got to pay for that band room.
That don't work.
Yeah, that is a model that's flawed. Or you've got a venue where literally at the front door, you're out on a Saturday night, you're walking around, there's a band playing there. You get to the front, sorry, that'll be $20 to get in. Well, I don't know this band. Well, do you want to check it out? Well, I don't know. I've got $20, or can I go to the next bar and get a drink? Yeah, there's nothing wrong with, you know, doing that if you want to run your venue like that, but I think it's a flawed model.
And this is why I think this idea will cover that at least.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Absolutely. No. And the other thing too, which I've recently experienced, is I mean, I run my own business where, you know, if someone wants my services, the way it usually works is like, okay, how much do you charge for this? And you give them a price. But a lot of these venues say to you, it's $20 or it's $15, right? And then, oh, how many people?
Like a set price.
Yeah, and how many people do you fit in there? Oh, 100 people. So, look, I play in a 9-piece soul sort of acid jazz funk band. Now, even if we fill out that venue, say at $20 with 100 people, that's $2,000 divided by 9.
So and you probably pay for the engine. You won't get all of that too.
No, you don't. You got to pay for the sound guy. You got to pay. I mean, it. I quite often spend more money on drinks when I'm there than what I get paid.
Yeah.
So, you know, it should be the other way around. It should be, okay, well, if you're confident that you can fill this place out, then how much do you think your band's worth? Okay, $80, $50, whatever it is. Then, but you're definitely right about also the band room concept doesn't work. But if it's free, people will come in and they'll drop that $20, $50, $100 at the bar anyway.
That's how it used to
be. Yeah.
Many years ago, that's how it used to be. Like, you know, and that was where people would do the hopping, the bar hopping.
Mm. Yeah.
From here, from there, from there. They'll go and see all these. And that was Melbourne.
Mm.
And the musicians were being paid, right? And that's where from a Thursday to a Sunday, you could go out. And even, you know, but the Thursdays to Sundays were the main nights where people would go out and they'd go from one place to another. They'll go and see this set there, that set there, that set there. And there wouldn't be any cover charges. I'm talking about a few years back now, but that's where the heart and soul of Melbourne was. But musicians were getting paid as well, you know. So I don't know whether there was more money involved, people paying, you know, more people going out. I don't know what you know. I don't know what the environment is like now. Yeah, the economic environment. I have no idea. But that was the period where you go out and you see a band and people really weren't expecting to pay a cover charge or they just wanted to go and see a band, and the band was paid from the venue. But how much the venue was making, I'm not quite sure. But there was sort of like a set price of how many what bands would get how much, right? Now you know, like I'm resorting to hiring my own whole place now to make my own gig. I have to hire out the whole place because I've got a niche style of music, right? For me to hire out a whole place, I have to now ensure that A, that's paid for. The musicians I have with are paid for. Marketing that I have is paid for. I'm not even putting myself in that bracket to get paid, right? Sometimes, most of the times. So, and that's an added stress up on top of you rehearsing, organizing rehearsals, organizing the people, whether people can come or not.
That's another time as well, because you're in the band.
And this is the making this is the, it. You're not paid for this.
No, right? The admin work. How you're doing so many changes? Because one person is not there, and the day just changes. So you still continuously your hours are
exactly. And you're working, running this,
but not paid.
You're running it as a business, right?
Yeah.
Now your business is. You don't see the trajectory going like this with a lot of businesses here. It's a different kettle of fish, and this is why I think this particular idea will help. But again, like you said, you know, it's probably you can see corruption that's going or corrupt people being involved. Maybe, but if you've got the right people in there to govern it, and musicians and venues will respect that because they're both sides are going to see a something good come out of it.
Mm.
You know.
So when's the first union meeting?
Look, I'm not the person. I can.
And
I
do
can,
we also know that who's the right person of the art and culture minister
well,
as well?
This is where you know the it has
maybe
to be,
someone called Sarita McCarg.
Oh.
Well, you know, there's a lot of musicians here that you know.
Really nice.
I know about the industry, right? There's heaps here. It's just the process of you know.
I think it's a good idea, and I think there needs to be something at a grassroots level.
Yeah,
what
exactly.
I am seeing more, this is the bit that's a bit disconcerting, is I'm seeing a few of these kind of, that's why I mentioned that union thing. I'm seeing a couple of shonky unions. I'm not going to name names, kind of coming up, and it's like, we want to make some changes to the music industry.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've seen them, and
yeah. Yeah, and it's a bit like, okay, you want to sign this petition? Well, you have to pay to join our union. It's like, well,
yeah.
hang on, I thought petitions were free. What's a, yeah, but we need this to do this. We need to fund it. I'm like, okay, I get that's how you start unions. I know this is a different slight, we're going off talk course, but it is, it's quite pertinent because, you know, musicians, you know, as we know, we're not the richest people on earth. Quite often, we have to, you know, scrounge around to make ends meet or hustle. And now we want to pay some random person to go, oh, you know, we'll see what we could do about it. We'll take it to the next level up. And it's like, well, I want to actually see what's happening in terms of the petition. Like, because we, honestly, you or I could just petition our local anyone member. Can. Yep. Anyone can do it. And nobody realizes that. A lot of people don't realize that, that you can, it's that easy. So
yeah. And it's not about, it's not about a as you said, a union organization or a non-for-profit organization. It's government.
Yep.
Straight there. It's not about going through these other organizations where, you know, they make money or they're the middleman. No middleman. There's a governing body for infrastructure. There's a governing body for a lot of things in government at the moment. There should be a body for the arts, and that be split up into whether you're a musician or whether you're an actor or what. Because there's a lot of grayness.
I find it quite amazing because it's a multi-million dollar profit in the amount of money that just live music alone, that's not even putting into, you know, licensing and sponsor everything else that music, local musicians bring into the economy in the state of Victoria alone, and again, not even thinking nationally, is huge. And yet it's always, you know, nothing against sport, but it's like that's the priority for the government.
Priority for the nation, really.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a whole different topic to get into.
Yeah, but you also have to remember that, like, in particular, you know, artists were forgotten during the lockdowns as well.
Oh, definitely.
Zero.
Yep.
I still think of a lot of the artists who are really still struggling.
Yeah, all of us are still struggling. All of us.
But you know, you mentioned because a lot of the artists during the COVID and before, we lost it. And we don't even know where they are.
They faded into the ether.
Or they may be struggling.
They moved into state overseas.
Some of them overseas. Yeah.
Or do they even having ends of meat, you know? Or they will be still struggling. How do we find out? Because I've seen a lot of artists or young gender, you know?
Yeah, totally agree.
Which is they're doing from passion and they're doing whatever is possible to do that. Right?
Well, yeah, it's a big thing, isn't it?
Another question as well. Do we also need to sit, once we get the government body, also what is the range of the price for the setup of the artist?
That's
because are we going to be just playing for $100, $50, $60, $200? What is the right? Because Boat, I know the Boat is limit is there $250. And now they,
I know, but it's
and they're also giving in like what they told me recently that we're going to give you a superannuation, which is the new thing is happening.
But that's what I'm saying.
And
minus all those organizations, all those not-for-profit.
Yeah, we don't
minus
need
all
that.
Of them.
They
don't come into it.
Yeah.
The only people that come into it are the musicians and the venues.
Yeah.
Right? 75% of whatever. Because government
body organization, they already sorted out.
Yeah, so they're the middlemen. They're organizations. They've got their ways of getting the grants and getting their finances, right?
Yeah.
As individuals, as musicians, and as venues, there needs to be that direct contact. Yeah. And there needs to be incentives there for that. Because, and that's why I'm saying 75, 80%, not putting a dollar value on it, but you know, I think that'll help.
I think that will help for the venue and also for artists as well.
Of course,
the pressure is out because the audience are there, artists are coming, playing, and they're getting paid.
And exactly. And this is where some of the venues might change their style of what genre they have.
Door charge as well.
Genre, you know, some people.
And
have,
also according to the venue as well, what sort of genre they can bring, different.
And because if they're incentivized to bring this person or that person, or you know, they'll change, and then more it'll be better for the culture of music. Anyway,
multicultural.
That's my take on it. Anyway,
good point.
Yeah, it's just a
very good point. Yeah,
it's when you're struggling for something, you're a passion for something, you'll be thinking outside of the box. It'll force you to think about us a bit outside of the box. And I think this is one of those ideas that I think can come into fruition with the right people at the top, not us. But in saying all of that, change the topic once again. What have you guys? What are you guys working on now? It's a bit of a plug time, Simon.
Well, I did mention before that I'm drumming on the side. So
yeah.
Give us the name again.
Okay, so it's for the fifth time mention this. DM a drummer, as in direct message a drummer. So yeah, I've got the it's all on the Instagram, the Facebook. Yeah. But the reason I mentioned this, is I set this up sort of around the post lockdown thing, because there was no. I couldn't see any sort of drummer for hire thing around. Like some people kind of casually say, oh, you know, I'm a freelance drummer, and I've got a few mates that do that as well, but I didn't sort of have that professional touch. So, you know, drumming was my first love, first passion. And basically I just drum in various styles. If they, you know, if there's a band that's a soul band, they want a soul drummer, I can be that soul drummer. If there's a band, I do draw the line at metal, not because I don't enjoy it, but it's a very technical thing. Yeah. But yeah, even stuff like, you know, hip hop or things like that that might require a trap kit or whatever. So there is a gig coming up in October 20th, assuming this podcast come out before then.
This podcast coming out next week.
Oh, beautiful. Okay, so October 20th, there's a tribute show for Elliot Smith, the great late Elliot Smith, American singer-songwriter par excellence. That's on at the Corner Hotel. Saturday, October 20. So we've got a few different artists, but have a look at the Corner Hotel website for more details as to who's appearing. But yeah, I'll be drumming the different artists, and that's you know a really good opportunity because I love drumming in, you know, for any sort of style, but particularly styles that I enjoy.
Like.
Yeah, that helps too. So yeah, so that's what I'm working on. Yeah,
Arif, actually, I'm gonna plug something.
Okay, yeah, go for
you've
it.
Got a song.
We have got a single out. It came out last Friday. We did a bit of a collaboration with Arif. It's called The Journey. It's on Spotify and all the other platforms, as we mentioned before. It's flamenco and jazz fusion, so it's a bit different. But I'll put the links up and everything like that. But that's what we've been working on together. We're also working on a different project which we need to get back into.
Yeah, some more original stuff.
Yeah, but it's a mixture of pop and flamenco, and we're waiting on a young lady to come back from overseas.
Yes.
To assist us, Dylan. But you've got some groove runner.
Yeah, I've got heaps. I'm sort of on cruise control, but I've got the 9-piece funk, soul, acid jazz. We've got some original stuff too, Groove Runner.
Awesome,
so we've
man.
Got a gig on October 6th is our next one at Bergie's Band Room or whatever it's called. And we're playing there. And then I'm doing a few concerts. Like a couple of big Turkish, like massive Turkish singers coming. Yep. So I've got the MD, you know, amateur MD hat on for that one. And then I also play on quite a number of other gigs. But yeah, I'm just in a happy place right now with trying to or continually learning, obviously, but still my end game is basically to be able to play anything for anyone at any time.
Yes.
So that's
gun for hire.
That's the end game.
Yeah.
Goals.
Yeah. So but yeah. That's it from me. Yeah.
Sarita? Or oh. Sarita?
Sarita. Sarita, got so many things coming up. The Helen is the director of the movie. The movie is called Auntie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be shoot here in Melbourne and also in India. Some scenes are going to be done in India. So I'm reading a script. So I need to write some music for that movie. Then another theater project as well is I'm working with Nella as well together. It's called Mrs. Bean. You know Mr. Bean? You have so
Mrs. Bean.
So that's
great. Hang on, he had a wife?
I don't know, but this
the
is
the lady of the glasses. This is,
yeah.
The episode.
So this project I'm like thinking of it. Like, what
could be sister that never married.
So writing on that, some music. Then on the 14th, I'm playing with the, you know, the Boat is organizing in a Burincha that in Upware.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm working, Surita Makag and her band is coming with, of course, Pentelias and Jonathan Diamond, and Yuval Ashkar is there with me and Manmeet. And so we're bringing that multi, the culture of the songs from India to Greece to Arabic and Sufi music together, and some of my own tune as well. And so we blend together in a unique way with, you know, coming out with the, especially Yuval and myself, we're singing some of the Sufi song as well, or, you know, from Sindh as well, from Pakistan or Punjab, which is Sindh is a part of, it's still there in Pakistan. My own dad's songs, because I wrote the book as well. So
that's right.
From,
yeah,
from the book, I need to promote that. Then 15th, I'm playing at the Crown Casino again. I don't know if you heard that there is a very good motivational speaker coming from India as well. It's called Chetan Bhagat. He's coming. And he wrote so many movies, you know, novels. He's a novels writer as well and published a lot of books. So that's have been happening on the Promenade on the 15th. Then on the 19th, the date's is going to come out, but I'm announcing anyway. It's probably is happening at the amphitheater in Fairfield, I think.
Oh, okay, that's a nice place. Yeah,
yeah, and
I've played there before.
And so that will be this afternoon with Sam Evans and Keir. Keir also is another very slide guitarist. Dobra, side guitarist. Yeah. And then on the 21st, I'm doing at Echoes Festival, which is Leanne Hall. In she's organized an amazing festival in Warburton.
Hey, Warburton.
Yeah, and so I'm working on that.
Wow.
Then I've got the
yeah.
Spawn is again. So Spawn is like, we booked till the March.
Sorry, did you say it's with called Spawn? Spawn again?
Spawn.
No, Spawn.
Oh, I just thought Spawn again is a good name. Kind of sounds like a Bjorn again, but like an evil version.
So that's also, it's like lots happening. And then I'm teaching from home as well, because now I'm living in Faulkner. So I teach my as much as possible I can give to the classes.
So what are you doing next week?
You have to go through my calendar. People ask, you know, you don't remember.
We'll put all the links up.
We'll put all the links up.
I think my link is there on the Facebook, and you will put it up on the links.
Yeah, we'll
too.
Add it to the.
Like, what do you got? You got?
Oh, mine's not so full.
But you'll be quite quick.
I'm gonna
I'll be the quickest.
I don't actually remember the date, but I'll be doing a gig with Brandon Lee. He plays the koto. Yeah. That's my next looping. Right. We're going to loop some songs together.
Wow. Yep.
Not the same Brandon Lee that was in Crow, the Crow.
No, he does get that reference a lot.
I'm seeing you. He's coming tomorrow to have a jam.
Oh, he's lovely, lovely being.
Back from the dead.
Yeah.
He never died. He's
the black makeup.
Oh, gosh. So I don't remember when that is, but yeah, I just don't remember. But it'll be in October, but that's my next gig. I'll do gigs with other people like yourself, but I don't remember when those gigs are. They'll just be and flamenco one as well.
Yeah, so we've got a show coming up on the 21st. It's sort of like a launch of my album From Earth to Sky.
Yay.
It's going to be in Sunbury, out in the north part of Victoria. So and also we've got the single as well, The Journey.
I love it. It took me on a journey.
Yeah.
Journey through D. Yeah.
Thanks, Arif. He's the one who actually came up with the name.
Like, yeah. Oh, I love the name. It's great. Yeah.
He goes, where are we playing it from? Which key? I go, from D. Goes, and it's a journey, right? That's it. The journey. Oh, cool.
So one more thing is coming for people who are really like don't want to come to all this gig. But there is this one gig is happening in Hot Spring on Diwali, because Diwali festival is our special festival for India.
Right.
It's our like Christmas, you know.
Yeah. That's right.
So this
is
the second year I'm doing the Diwali Gala Festival, which will be on Hot Spring as well, Mornington Peninsula.
Oh, in Mornington.
So we'll be probably 13, 14 artists.
What date is that one?
12th of November.
Amazing. That sounds great. I'll try and
come
on over.
Because you see, that gig is there. Of course, we pay, but everyone get a little bit pay. But for me, it's like the Diwali is once in a year concert I do, and where I want everyone to celebrate that, you know. And because what's money, you know? Money.
It helps.
It helps, but also.
Yeah. I mean, we do it for love.
We do for love. You know?
Simon's itching to say something.
Sorry, it's just the way my mind works. But I wish I'd known you a few years ago, because we have a song called Fireglow, where we use the opening is a drone from one of those digital
Tanpura. We have a Tanpura, Tanpura.
I wanted to get an authentic sitar. I wanted to get a real sitar on the song, but we had to settle for the digital one, which still worked, but it's not the same.
We'll remake it. I'll come and record for you.
It's too late now. The song's already done.
But make another one.
Remix.
Do another one.
Remix.
Do another one.
Remix. Yeah. We'll do a remix.
Remix. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah,
gig is where you, like, I try to bring the culture and festival vibe where I'll be performing, dancing, and hopefully if I go to India in between, bring lots of costumes.
Arif, you look moved by that. Yeah.
I am, bro. Yeah. I'm in Sydney that day. It's a Sunday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we've got Furi's concert.
Well, thanks, everyone. I'd first like to mention our sponsors, Cake Eclipse, for these lovely, lovely cakes. Go
delicious.
For it.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Oh, I can smell.
Of course you can. You're not allergic to nuts, are you?
No. But I work with a few. Bite.
Yeah. I like that one. or I own a couple.
I just got that.
Yeah, I wasn't allergic to nuts until I joined the public service.
That's amazing. Beautiful.
Yeah, so thank you. Our sponsor is Cake Eclipse. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Great podcast. Pleasure to have you guys on. Wishing you guys all the very best and, you know, in your, you know, further journey.
Endeavors. Life,
yeah.
Music.
never satisfied, isn't it?
That's part of the fun.
It's like always hunger is there and you feel sometimes scared as well.
Quest.
And that's why you got to feed it all the time. But
with
thanks.
Cake.
Yeah.
Oh, with cakes. Cake,
with anything you want. Thanks once again, everyone. It's been a pleasure. Up until next time, ciao.
Ciao.
The Strike A Chord Podcast, presented to you by ValentinoFlamenco.com and AmlaMusic.com.